From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, June 5th, 2026. Maine's Department of Transportation Commissioner says he's trying to educate state lawmakers about the importance of funding repair and maintenance projects after the department revealed that its work plan budget is short by hundreds of millions of dollars. Carol Bousquet reports.
During the last legislative session, it became apparent that a $130 million state investment in the Department of Transportation would not materialize. Commissioner Dale Doughty says he decided to delay six paving projects this summer and reduce the department's work plan for the next few years by $200 million.
We talked about $130 in this work plan, but that gap is truly about $170 million every year. And we need to find a stable, repeatable fund source that can fill that gap that we can count on, that the legislature can count on, and the people of Maine can count on.
Doughty says Governor Janet Mills asked him to educate lawmakers on the importance of maintaining Maine's infrastructure and finding a stable funding source. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
The Maine Board of Pesticide Control voted today to ban a toxic class of rodenticide. Francesca Gundrum of the Maine Audubon Society says that the potent chemicals can persist in the environment long after they've been ingested, harming other wildlife.
So think owls, hawks, fox, bobcat, even up to bear. The more we learn, the more we see that they are present in our environment and they're harmful to us.
That's because those animals prey on the rodents that ingest the poison, which is also potent enough to kill them, too. The state of Maine conducted sampling for rodenticides in 2024 and found that 4 out of 4 bears and 4 out of 6 hawks tested positive for the chemicals. The ban on the sale of the products will go into effect next week. Some immigration lawyers in Maine are denouncing the U.S. Senate's vote to advance a $70 billion multi-year funding package for federal immigration enforcement. The Portland-based Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project said in a written statement Friday that the new funding will, quote, put the rights and safety of Maine residents at risk, tear families apart, detract from overall public safety, and also hurt the state's workforce and economy. Maine's delegation was split, with Republican Senator Susan Collins voting for the measure and independent Senator Angus King opposed. It now heads to the House. U.S. Senate hopeful Graham Plattner today denied some of the allegations made by former girlfriends in a New York Times story this week, including one charge that he engaged in physically threatening behavior.
No, that's just not true.
Plattner spoke with Maine Public's Steve Missler in Hancock this morning about the allegations and whether he fears they may impede the momentum of his campaign.
The latest allegations come from Lindsay Fifield, a Virginia conservative who has worked for right-leaning groups and Republican campaigns. Fifield also asserted that Plattner knew long ago that his controversial tattoo was associated with Nazi iconography, a claim that first surfaced in the publication Jewish Insider last fall. Plattner says that's not true.
No. And also, it's important to remember, she's the original source of that story.
The Jewish Insider story.
Yeah. So like we're just talking about the exact same thing. You know, I had that tattoo for 17 years. I got that tattoo with other Marines who have also been happy to talk about it. I reenlisted the United States Army. I was screened for gang and hate tattoos. I got a top secret security clearance to work for the State Department on the ambassador security detail in Afghanistan. I was screened for gang and hate tattoos. I took my shirt off multiple times for 17 years, including, as the campaign shared, a video of me dancing shirtless in front of my extended family at my brother's wedding to his wife, who is Jewish, and her Jewish family who had come to the wedding. So I would say all of the evidence points to the fact that I didn't know I had a skull and crossbones. Right. That's what I had. And the moment I found out it had those connotations, it was covered up within 3 days. Mm-hmm. The reason that this story even exists is because of this one single person.
This relationship occurred, how old were you, late 20s, roughly?
Yeah, late 20s, early 30s, I think.
And this is when you were in D.C.?
Yeah, and I think it's also important, like, we never dated. Mm-hmm. This is someone I had a casual relationship with. I was single at the time.
What kind of contact have you had with Lindsay? When did that stop?
Last contact we ever had is she, last fall, texted me to ask, I just bought several hundred oysters for an upcoming party, and what's the best way for me to store them? And I told her because, you know, I do know how to store oysters.
Plattner has navigated other controversies by talking about them in the media and at his nearly 80 town halls. What's emerged is a redemption story about a combat vet who went through a dark period after returning home, sought therapy through the VA, and slowly rebuilt his life in Sullivan. But last week, a new story broke that he sexted with several women early in his marriage, and it threatened to puncture his redemption narrative.
For Amy and I both, it's a unique experience to have a whole bunch of people care about the details of our marriage. And I'll just be upfront. Our marriage is our marriage. And this kind of story is about something that happened early in our marriage that we dealt with. I was accountable to my wife. I was vulnerable and open and incredibly honest with Amy. And she, in turn, gave me a ton of love and compassion. And that allowed us to build a much, frankly, stronger marriage. And then years later, you know, here we find ourselves getting into the campaign, and Amy goes and confides in someone on the campaign staff about details of our personal life. We were doing it because we thought we should. We thought we should, like, be very upfront about everything that's happened. And this is before the campaign. This is early in our marriage. Right. And then that person goes and betrays Amy's trust and turns, like, details of her marriage that we had already, like, dealt with and moved through into a media spectacle.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, that's painful.
I just kind of wonder, yeah, I mean, I know you were expecting a tough campaign. Was it, did you expect this?
I mean, I wouldn't say I expected this, like, in detail, but I expected some version of it. I mean, when Amy and I decided we were going to do this, we knew that our lives were going to get ripped apart. We knew that people were going to lie. We knew that people were going to make things up. We knew that the machine itself, like the media, and no offense, but like this larger media apparatus, the whole political pundit class combined with like the political establishment itself was going to fight us tooth and nail. Because what we are building here is something substantial. What we are building here in the state of Maine is an actual political movement to retake American politics, to take it back from the moneyed interests, from the economic royalists, from the oligarchy, the billionaires. And they own everything. And they're going to fight us tooth and nail. And we knew that they were going to, there was no bar that is too low for them to stoop to fight back against something like this.
Right.
And the thing is that we also know that we can take it. We know that our love for each other, our marriage is, there's nothing these people can do to try to like destroy Amy and I's marriage. I think what the system doesn't understand is that we're committed to a better future. Mm-hmm. We're committed to breaking the power of this political establishment that does not represent the average person.
I think a part of the appeal of your movement is that you've been able to communicate very clearly to people about what you want to do, like what the problem, you've diagnosed these problems and income inequality, struggles of working class Mainers. And I wonder, though, about the cumulative effects of these revelations about your personal life.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to do anything serious. Yeah. And I think, and the reason is that the whole point of these stories is to make sure we're not talking about healthcare. It's to make sure we're not talking about raising taxes on the rich. It's to make sure we're not talking about getting money out of politics. That's the purpose. The people that we are against, the system that we are against, whether it's Susan Collins in this race, or if we're talking about like the actual larger political system itself and a media system that surrounds it and in many ways protects it, the last thing anybody wants to talk about are the actual material struggles of regular people in this country and the policy that we need to change to end those struggles. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to talk about that. And so the more that they talk about me shows just how little they want to talk about the actual challenges the American people are facing. And I just don't think it's going to work. And I very firmly believe that if I go out and continue to engage with people and continue to talk about the reality that Mainers are living in, the struggles of regular everyday people, that's why we're going to win this thing.
Despite the unflattering stories, Plattner said nobody in the Maine Democratic Party or the National Party had asked him to drop out of the race. He said the movement he's building isn't for those who think he should. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.